deepest darkness of Dromund-Kos, to the smelly sewers of Nar Shaddaa, to the brightest light that shine on Tython. This is Flashpoint.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode 31 of Flashpoint. As always, it's great to be here, and this fortnight I have with me two guys that make Tom Selleck look ugly. First cab off the rank, Ed, how are you, mate?
Tom Selleck always looked ugly.
Oh, it depends if you like moustaches or not.
Well, okay. Yeah, other than going slowly sane, fine.
You're well. That's good. And also joining us is Simon. Great to have you back, Simon, after some technical glitches a fortnight ago.
Yes, it's good to be back. I've taken the responsible piece of hardware, hammered it into small pieces, buried them, and it's promised never to do it again.
Yeah, right. And you believed it?
I did.
And the world's most unreliable man, Mark, is to be fair to Mark, he's totally told me he wouldn't be able to make tonight, most likely because he's at a family function. And as we all know, family comes first. So hope you're having a good time, Mark, though nothing can be as good a time as us. So let's go straight on to Republic News. News? That sounds like I got the hiccups again.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Republic News.
This is about the third podcast in a row I've said, gee, a lot's happened in the last fortnight. But gee, a lot's happened in the last fortnight, mostly because of 1.2 finally going live. When was it? Last Tuesday? So I should put a disclaimer too before I start this podcast that I've just spent the last 2 weeks in New Zealand. So I only spent about 3 hours playing the game yesterday and today to catch up with 1.2, but my general awareness of time frames is pretty limited, so bear with me. So, guys, I'll start with you this time, Simon. When did 1.2 go live? Last Tuesday?
It was the 10th, I believe, wasn't it?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, there you go. That long ago.
I'm not sure. The 10th of something. It might have been this month, might have been last month, might have been 2 years ago. Not sure. Yeah. But the 10th of something.
This is where you come for all the up-to-date and incisive information. I didn't think it was that long ago, but anyway, I'll take your word for it. So it's live. Everyone's obviously had a good thrash through it. Ed, what your thoughts so far actually playing the real deal?
There are good things, there are bad things, there are ugly things. But for the most part, I like it. I really do. There are some things that need help, but I like it. I like it. The legacy system works. It is a bit complicated, as we'll get to later, I think. And they fixed a number of things, and they glitched a number of things, which is usually the way that these large scale patches work. We'll just have to muddle on through and see what happens.
So what have you found that hasn't worked that well?
The main things right now is my loading time has tripled for everything. So I'm just sort of, I'm sitting there in the loading screen and listening to my group mate starting the battles or whatever, and I'm just sitting there and sitting there and sitting there. And then the space combat mission does the same thing. It lags, and you start like 10 or 15 seconds into the mission, which means you can't get the bonuses on a number of occasions. The most annoying thing, though, is a bug with Iron Fist on the S-less Flashpoint the Republic side. You know, you have to interrupt his powerful ability, which is Headshot, which does 75% of your health with each hit. You have to interrupt that or you die. You interrupt it, and it goes off anyway, and you die. That's really annoying. They say they're going to fix it. I hope they fix it soon.
So you're actually getting some lag issues or, yeah, game responsiveness issues.
Yeah, lag issues, some game responsiveness issues. Once the game actually loads, it's marvelous, and you do all kinds of crazy stuff. And but, you know, until it loads...
I find that's a good time to get some generic high dusting or other housework done, though. But that's just me. Simon, first Ed, and what's the stuff that you've gone, gee, this is a big improvement since 1.2?
A big improvement. There's some of the graphics, a lot of graphics issues. The legacy system is a lot of fun if you have a lot of money, because you'll need a lot of money to get some of the stuff. The new flashpoint or the new operation is definitely end game. You have to be seriously well geared to go in there. I was regularly doing hard mode flashpoints, and I thought I was pretty badass. You know, we went in there with a 16-man group, and we wiped, and we wiped, and we wiped, and we wiped. And we all know what we're doing, and we're all doing it fairly well, and we're still running into brick walls every time we turn around. You make one mistake in there, and it's over.
Which is probably how it should be. I mean, I'd worry if people were knocking it over too easily, although I do note, and I don't have the details in front of me, but one guild knocked off the bosses there around a week ago, and then a second guild did it the night after. And sorry, guys, I know you both listened to this podcast. I just didn't dial it up in front of me. Congratulations. Not something. You'll all be bashing your heads now, the guild involved. But yeah, but I'd worry if more than, you know, 2% or 5% of players were actually knocking over that content already.
Yeah, it's really high. Like I said, it's really high-end content. The stuff they added is pretty cool. They haven't changed so much, but they have changed a lot of little things. And I like it.
And now,
for the most part, I like it.
So, mixed scorecard. And Not Steamboat were the name of the first guild, and Remnants were the second one. So well done, guys. Simon, good parts of 1.2 for you so far?
Overall, I haven't noticed a massive difference, I have to admit. I think the game plays a little bit more responsive, although I think I have to agree with Ed, that it just, the loading screens just seem to hang around a bit longer than they used to, which, you know, doesn't really bother me that much, but I think that's noticeable. But on the whole, I think the gameplay is actually a little bit nippier. I like the fact that they've added a way of restricting the number of other characters, other players that get rendered, yeah, especially when you get into some crowded areas like the fleet. That, I think, is definitely a good idea, especially for older systems, or if you just don't want to waste that many processor cycles on rendering people you don't give a damn about. And the only other really significant, well, it's not even significant thing I've noticed, is that with Spice Combat, the loading screens, it shows you how many parsecs away the thing is, which I think is kind of cool.
Okay, yeah, I haven't done any space comments since then, so it's an interesting point. And the negative stuff?
Well, there was a bit of fuss about the increased resolution textures for your character. I haven't really noticed anything any different. In all honesty, half the time when I'm wandering around, I'm still getting some pretty coarse and crappy looking textures loading, so I haven't noticed any improvement in the overall rendering. It still seems to be as glitchy. I still get the mirror ball eyes or the black eyes in cutscenes. So, but that could just be the fact I'm using a Radeon 4850 and it's a bit crap. So I'm not going to pin too much of that on the game itself.
Oh, see, whereas I'm willing to, because I get that as well, and my card's okay.
Oh, okay.
So I'm willing to blame the game.
Right, we'll blame the Hero Engine then.
Yeah, that's right.
Of course.
But the rendering stuff, I haven't noticed any difference, except that my actual character seems to have much clearer resolution of its armor and stuff. So the first thing that struck me when I logged in on was, wow, my character looks better for some reason. So I don't know why that was.
Oh, well, that would be it then. Yeah. Yes. So it works for some people.
Yeah. I mean, for what it's worth, my experience in all of 2 or 3 hours play is that, yeah, it's I haven't noticed any big differences. The thing that I was a bit disappointed by was probably losing all my talent points and having to reset them because I can't remember how I set them up. And so
yeah,
I just randomly click stuff, and now abilities like the Force Lift, which I'd had set up that there was no cast time on that, now there is, and my project has a longer cooldown and stuff. It's totally changed the way I've had to play. So it's made me think, which is probably a good thing, because I was just in a real rut with the way I was pressing the keys. So I suppose I'd see that as positive and negative. But otherwise, haven't really noticed a lot of difference, because I'm not an end-game player at this stage, been all of level 40.
Well, the other thing that I completely forgot to mention is the UI changes that you can customize now. You can add various features that apparently have been in-game all along but just weren't implemented completely. You can figure out which, the boss that you're targeting is targeting someone else. If you're the tank and you want to pull the boss off a healer, make sure the boss doesn't attack the healer.
Oh, target of target.
Boss. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your target of target. That's the word. Phrase. Whatever. It's been that kind of way.
Yeah. No, look, I just think it's encouraging that they've released such a big update. And yes, there are glitches, and I know some PvPers are still quite unhappy from going through the dev tracker and the forums. But overall, it seems to have been a fairly successful, update. And there's obviously lots more to come. And the community Q&A discussion, if you read it, there's, still a lot of stuff on the roadmap, as they said at the Guild Summit. So there's only going to be more and more stuff as long as it's implemented well.
Mm.
So, yeah, well done, 1.2. How we'll get to know you much better, I'm sure. And, of course, along with that, Spyware slipped in a new website as well, which is a rather tidy piece of work, in my opinion. It's just a much better, prettier, more functional website. Simon, you agree?
I agree. It's much slicker. I think as a marketing piece, it's a lot stronger than the old one was, but it's just a lot more visually attractive. I think it's easier to find your way around as well.
Yeah,
it's much clearer. Things are, it's just better.
Yep, agreed. And just a note for our listeners on sound quality. If up until now the sound quality's been a bit shitty, it's because we're such a high-quality operation here that I had a significant other watching Doctor Who on ABC iView and draining a lot of bandwidth. So if everyone sounded a bit distorted, blame my significant other. But now it should be sounding quite good. So there you go. Toros HQ, very high quality. So, yeah, go to the website. And I even like the way the forums are laid out now. I just didn't like the design overall, and it just seems to be easier to read, and I'm just rather happy.
Agreed.
Yeah, we're all like, oh, God.
We're unanimous.
Yeah, unanimous. That makes for a great debate. Legacy.
I disagree.
I was saying before the podcast, because with 1.2 and Legacy's come into its own, and I feel really embarrassed to say this, that Legacy still confuses the crap out of me. I understand the principle. I understand that, you know, your other tunes can get the benefits of what you do and vice versa. But it still confuses the hell out of me. So, Ed, since it's gone live, how have you found it? And do you want to give idiots like me a bit of a primer on how Legacy works and what you should be doing to try and optimize that?
Well, the way the Legacy works is you have to get one of your characters past your chapter one. Chapter one is usually level 35 or so, something like that. Basically, once you get one character past that, you unlock your legacy. You get a family name, a legacy name, which shows up after your toon's name. And that is common to all characters on the server. Now, depending on how many characters you've played and how many of the companions you have upgraded all their affection all the way up, you get bonuses. The only character that I have all the way up is actually my trooper. I'm working on others now. I've been working on others since Legacy dropped. But with the trooper companions, all, well, aside from the ship droid, who doesn't really count, because, you know, I still want to throw him out the airlock, but that's another story entirely. You get plus 10 presents for each character, for each companion character that you have leveled up all the way. If you've gone through all of the quests for them, you've gone through all the conversations for them. And presents increases the abilities of your companion. Currently, just with one character at level 50 with all of the companion stuff maxed, I have plus 200 presents. So my companion, no matter what character I'm playing, my companion does more damage than I do, which is generally good. Send them in as a tank. You know, you run over there, you get all their aggro, you will die, but I will kill them while you're dying. I like doing that because I'm evil.
Well, that's a good primer. So that explains it. I mean, I did understand about the toons, and I keep forgetting it's for each server, which is why I'm getting no benefits, because my primary is sitting on a server about to be transferred, which we'll talk about in a minute. But, yeah, the family name certainly one I've experienced. And for those a few episodes back, I talked about my family name being McGurkin Squirter. Unfortunately, I'd learnt on achieving the end of chapter one that there's a 15, I think it's 15 character limit. So I had to go with McGurkin Squirt, which is not quite as good, but it's there.
Let me tell you one of my new guildmates in the guild that I will talk about later. Created a character, and the family name was Bader. And actually, the character's name was Bader. And then, of course, he was a Jedi. So when he completed he got his master level.
Oh, God.
What did his name become?
Okay. I thought you said Vader, and I was going to say there's no way they'd let him have that. But
no,
okay.
No, they didn't do that. But, oh, there have been... There have been the various mods or devs jumped on that and said, change the name. We will change the name for you, but you will change the name.
Yeah. And see, that's not even terribly original.
This is not the name you're looking for.
It's kind of funny, though.
Well, yeah. You can't beat a bit of genitalia humor. And not that McGurkin Squirt has anything to do with genitalia, although it probably does, and I just never realized it. So yes, Legacy. Thank you, Ed. So for those of you, get your toons happening on the same server and get the benefits. And is there any uniformity or any rhyme or reason behind the funny little symbol you have above your head now in 1.2?
That was actually always intended to be there, but I think it's one of the other things that they just implemented in 1.2. You can actually turn it off in the preferences, and I most people I know do it just because it's annoying. So it shows your class if you're in PvP or whatever. I guess it might be useful to know, you know, there's a healer over there. He hasn't done anything yet, but he's a healer killing now.
Yeah, you've answered my question. I wasn't sure whether it was a legacy thing or a class thing. So I'm sure everyone knows this but me. But anyway.
It's just an annoying thing.
Yeah. And this podcast exists to educate me. So
of course.
That's what it's about. And so we talked about transfers. The big news locally is the fact that those of us that are eligible for the free Asia-Pacific transfers, and that's a whole story on its own that I haven't dialed up here, but essentially you needed to have had your character, I think, was registered with something like the 28th of February. Anyway, it's all on the Star Wars website. Eligible people will have received an email, or maybe not. In my case, I didn't receive an email about the Asia Pacific transfers. But when you log into the Star Wars The Old Republic website, go to your account, and then under your account, the very first thing should be the server transfers. Click on that, and it gives the details of your toons, and then you choose where you want them to go to, as far as Dalbora and so on. So if you haven't done it, get in there. I think you've got till something like the 24th, which is Tuesday. So you need to do it pretty quickly. And then sometime after that, there'll be a three-hour period. Your character's unplayable while they transfer it. There were some big glitches when they first announced it. People, and me included, you'd log into your form and it wouldn't allow you to select the service you wanted to transfer. Some people just wouldn't allow them to select anything on the form. Stephen Reed jumped on Twitter and said, "We're aware of it. We're looking at it. We hope to fix it in a few hours." Some people then could get in. I still, you know, a bunch of people couldn't, including me. But anyway, I tried it today and it's worked. So I'll throw to you, Simon, as a fellow Australian. Have you done your transfers and stuff like that?
I have. Couldn't get it to work to start with. Got the email at work and thought, oh, great. And then tried to log in and then realised I actually needed my little security key dongle. So couldn't. So waited, got home, and everything was greyed out. No characters to transfer, button greyed out. Not good. Not happy. So sent an email off, as you do, and got one back day and a half later and said, should all be fixed now. Thank you very much, from Protocol Droid, whatever. And when I finally did log in, I just saw how many characters I had spread across three different servers. And, it's a couple. I had a couple. Had to try and choose. Had to do the culling. It was quite painful.
Actually, and you've just reminded me of a really important issue with all this, because I've seen a lot of people discussing it, and that's the concern over, hey, I've got this toon over here. It's my main one. I want to transfer it to the Aussie server, but I'm really concerned that my name's going to be taken. Stephen Reed's posted a really detailed thing, and I'll try and do a post up to go live tomorrow with all the details, or I'll post a link in the show notes for this podcast. Where basically, and I think this is a great move, unlike something like WoW, where your character will be transferred even if you've created a placeholder character to try and protect your name. So I've got Weezen Henry, let's say, on the Oceanic server as a placeholder, and my real Weezen Henry comes over. Both will show for me when the transfer's complete. So you don't lose the name. Now, just I've got all the details here to make sure I get this right.
I did not know this.
So, as per Stephen Reed, let me make sure. Here's the short version. He says, if you have sufficient character slots free on your destination server, you can transfer your characters and then delete your placeholder characters, therefore ensuring you retain your character name after transfer. Then he goes on to basically say, you can only have 8 slots per server. So if you've got, you know, 6 placeholder characters and you've got 6 to transfer, it's not going to work, because it'll just transfer 2 of the 6 over to fill up the 8 slots and your other 4 will be left behind. So you'll actually need to delete placeholder characters prior to the transfer if you want them all to come across. Then after your transfer is complete, you'll be notified by email. You log into the game and navigate to the new region in the server selection screen. On the character select screen, you'll see any of your placeholder characters and also your transfer characters. You can delete any of your placeholder characters. And it just gives all the details there. I won't go on with all that. So it doesn't really give a lot of clarification on if someone else has got your name on that server, but then if you've already got a placeholder, you must own the name. So I suppose just people that haven't done placeholders that may be stuffed.
Yeah, I think the only thing you can do in that situation is what I've done, which is try and come up with alternative names that you're also comfortable with. And that's what I've done. It's just going to be a case of say la vie. But that is good to know. I might, just a couple of the pivotal ones, I might just have to do that.
Yeah, well, every five episodes or so, I actually try and come up with information that someone may not have heard, and I don't need to be educated myself. So there you go. So it'll be episode 36 before you hear that again.
Right. Unfortunately, though, I couldn't transfer over the 18 characters that I had.
No.
Over level 10. So there we go. Never mind.
Yeah, 8 seems a little bit low to me. I can't remember. Not wanting to compare constantly to WoW, but I think WoW's higher than that. I think it's 10 or 12. 10, I think it is. But yeah, look, 8's 8, and you've just got to work with it. And, I mean, you know, you don't need to have all your all your characters on the one server anyway, but...
No.
And what I still don't understand is Dalboro in particular is constantly under very heavy traffic, so I'm still not convinced how well this is going to work. Unless the take-up on the Australian servers of new players is very low and that basically everyone that's on Dalboro are playing alts anyway, in which case it'll work. But I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting just to see how the whole thing kind of, how they distill the whole thing down. Because, yeah, there could be a lot of people just... on the Australian servers with alts just to kill time until they can get their mains over.
That's right. Now, Ed, are you going to transfer any to the... Oh, you're not eligible, I suppose. Oh,
no, I'm not eligible since I'm not in Australia.
Oh, that's a bugger. Well, I mean, this is all very much guinea pig material for the main game, which is a character transfer service for the whole game. So I think we're helping to iron out any kinks, and there certainly have been some kinks so far. So here's to us Oceanic players helping BioWare get their processes right.
Yeah, well, having said that, I never actually did manage to get any character transferred over to the PTS. So, hopefully this will be a little bit smoother.
Oh, okay. Well, we must talk about that offline because I might be able to chase that one up.
It doesn't matter. I've still got my line first defense or whatever title because I leveled up a character past level 10. So I've got something for it at least.
Nice. Mm. So there we go. That's the Asia Pacific transfers. So they said end of April and it's pretty much on track for that. So well done to BioWare on that one. And there's still no information on the wider character transfers. Based on what I'm seeing, I still think it's at least a month away, if I was going to guess.
Probably more.
Yeah, I think mid-year is an unreasonable estimate. 2015 mightn't be.
What have you guys heard about low pop on some of the US servers? Because I've been hearing rumblings about that.
Ed, you first.
Yeah, I've heard some things about from various people that some of the servers are turning into ghost towns. But I mean, most of what I've heard is just gripes. Somebody ranting about how this bug wasn't fixed and how the BioWare is all evil and they should all be burned at the stake and that kind of thing. I haven't actually seen the server status very often, because once I log in, I'm there for most of the day, at least for now. I start a work placement tomorrow, so my time is going to drop through the floor. I'm hoping to get a lot of play time in today, but that's just me. I haven't actually seen anything on the server status about heavy usage anywhere except... there's a couple of spots that were heavy.
Yeah, well, if it's anything, like, I mean, and I know we're in a different time zone, but the only ones I ever see heavy are the Harbinger and the Jek-Jek-Tar and Swiftshore, which are the unofficial Oceanic ones, and then the actual Asia-Pacific ones. I'm yet to see anything move much beyond light. To be fair, we're in off-peak times for a lot of our play time.
Yeah,
most of the times that I'm logging in... Oh, Dalboro is very heavy right now.
Yeah.
There's a couple of places that are heavy. No, these are all in Europe. Duh. That's why. Okay, a couple of standard. The one that I'm most heavily involved with is the Ebonhawk, which is an RP server, and it's got fairly high volume, especially with the 1.2 dropping.
Yeah, hopefully that's brought a few people back.
You would not think so.
Not that the game's in any trouble or anything, but you know, some people just they tear through the content, get to higher level, and go, oh, there's nothing left to do, and then they go and play, I don't know, something beginning with G Wars or something.
Yeah, or in the case this weekend, the Diablo 3 beta.
Yeah, a bunch of people went off to do that from our guild, and you know, nobody blames them. I mean, it's Diablo 3, but. I'm not going to touch it until after it's been out a while.
There's some just to take a sidestep into the is, you know, Star Wars: The Old Republic struggling. Some analyst has added up the numbers and says that things have probably dropped off from the 1.7 million. I'm not convinced that's the case, but hell, even if they're at 1.5, 1.6, that's still a, you know, bloody successful MMO. And as it gets more well known, I think it's still going to grow. And look, based on Australia's PR efforts, there's a lot of room for growth because I still see zero promotion of the game.
Yeah,
I've seen it a couple of different places, but not nearly as much as they should have, I don't think.
No, I think the budget was limited, particularly in the outer territories, like us. But anyway, so
also EA doesn't do things like that anymore.
No. So, but anyway, I don't think it's struggling, but, you know, some people go, oh, the numbers are a bit low. So on the server issue, I mean, I out of everything, I would have thought BioWare are aware of people complaining about their servers being too low population. So I can't imagine they're going to wait forever to merge. But I can see that merging is also a big PR issue for them, in that as soon as they do that merge, there'll be the outcry of it's a dying game or it's a declining game.
Well, they might not have to do server merges if they just do increase the number of things you can do cross server, which would probably mitigate any major issues people have without having to go into the whole merging issue.
Extremely good point. And I mean, they've you know, openly said they're looking at looking for group tool for flashpoints and stuff like that. So you're right, that would solve a lot of the problem. That would solve 95% of it. So I don't particularly care if I don't run into a whole lot of toons running around, except for when I want to do something with them.
Yeah, agreed.
So
they just steal your mobs, and that's very annoying.
Exactly.
Let us ninja in on you and everything.
Particularly if it's bloody master beta. So, before we jump on to Ed's latest lore update, the last thing I had was, thanks to David Bass at BioWare. Thanks to David Bass at BioWare, he kindly offered Toros readers / listeners 10 codes for a torn fawn. I love the rhyming of that. And so over the last 10 days to 2 weeks, we've just done a promo on that. So for 5 people that post a comment on the appropriate post on the site and another 5 that like our page on Facebook, they're going into the draw for the Torn Fawn codes. And that actually closes at midnight tonight. So by the time you listen to this, it's actually too late to enter. So this is probably just a cruel joke, actually, even mentioning it, but I will anyway. So thanks. We've had literally hundreds of entries for it. So less than 10% of them are going to get them, but thanks for entering, and you can have your torn fawn. So they were given out, just for people not in the know, they were given out to people at the PAX East show a few weeks back, and because, you know, there's obviously not that big a presence down here, BioWare kindly made 10 of those codes available to us. Well, actually, look, I've got to be honest, there were 12 codes. I've given away 10, and because I need to write about it, I've been selfish and taken one, and I've got one left. which I haven't worked out what to do with yet. But it'll be used for the good of the universe.
Of course.
Good of the universe.
Yeah. I don't know. I might release it free. Like, I there's 11 in captivity. Maybe I'll release this one into the wild.
Free Willy.
Free Willy. Oh, and actually, and sorry, the part of going into the drawers, you had to tell us what you would name your Torn Fawn, and it's worth reading the post for some of the really cool names people have come up with. One of the more common ones that's very humorous is Sleeping Bag, for obvious reasons.
Luke's Sleeping Bag, yeah.
Oh, they're just Sleeping Bag, yeah. No Luke, but just, yeah, I'm going to call him Sleeping Bag, but there are a lot of other very innovative and funny ones as well. So I think one of them was going to call it Stephen Reed, from memory. And some crawler tried to say they call it Toros, which I thought was cute, but it doesn't give you any more chance of winning, sorry.
So nice try, yes, though.
Thanks to BioWare for those 10 codes. And so let's move on to lore update. Ed, I believe you've spent days, if not weeks, putting together this episode's lore update, so I'll throw to you.
Yeah, well, one of the things that just really annoyed me online the other day, I'm playing and trying to get things to work and stuff's running an operation and hitting a brick wall in an operation, and while after we wipe, we talk a little bit. And one of the things somebody said just sort of, I'm like, you gotta be kidding. He said, how fast do starships travel in Star Wars? What warp factor do they use? And I just sort of went, huh? It just sort of, we all thought it was a joke at first, but he was serious, or he was really good at stringing us on, because you could just hear the collective silence in the chat there for a moment. Everybody's just like, "What did he say?"
Okay, well, but it sounds like he's just a clone of me, and it wasn't me because I'm not in your guild. But I wouldn't use the words warp factor because I'm aware they're not a terminology that's used in Star Wars. But yeah, probably, and I know you're probably going to explain why that's such a faux pas.
Yeah, it's just a small faux pas, because starships in Star Wars do not use warp drives. They use hyperdrives. Now, some people have said, what's the big deal? It's just a... they're both faster than light travel, right? What's the big deal? The little tiny bit of a big deal. You ask any physicist about this, and I actually asked my uncle, who is a physicist, about this. One of the smartest men I've ever met, by the way. He worked for NASA and did a lot of really high-end radar-type work. But anyway, the difference between a warp drive, the theory of a warp drive, and the theory of a hyperdrive is that in this universe, the speed of light is constant, right? E equals mc squared, all of Einstein's things, even if you don't understand half of it, which I don't understand even a third of it, you've heard of it. You go to the speed, as you approach the speed of light, your mass increases, so you can't pass the speed of light, because by the time you reach there, your mass will be infinite. I think I got that right. Anyway, there are two commonly thought of ways of getting around this. One is the Star Trek method, which Gene Roddenberry just sort of came up with, apparently pulled it out of the air or something. But it is mathematically feasible, albeit somewhat improbable, to create a small field around a starship of some kind that basically goes into another universe for a little while. So you sidestep into another universe where the speed of light is different. You go much faster. And depending on how much power you put into it, is that's your warp factor. And warp factor 9 and all that Star Trek stuff. I'm going to get away from the Star Trek stuff. Hyperspace, on the other hand, is a completely different idea. It's you're going into another universe, too, but you're not creating a field around the ship. You're just jumping into that universe and then jumping out. The idea is you... In the other universe, you know, distances are different. So you bounce in and bounce out, you've gone a huge distance in our universe. Again, it's mathematically feasible. The probability of it actually working? Every single physicist I've actually corresponded with has had a different answer. Some of them say hell no. Some of them say, well, maybe. Some of them say yes. So I don't know. But the moral of this story is do not make Star Trek references in a Star Wars MMO, because, you know, people tend to feel very strongly about things like that. And you know, when you're jumping into hyperspace, you know, you might wind up being tossed out of your ship in hyperspace if you say things like that, in which case nobody will ever find you.
But if a warp drive does the alternate universe thing, then what's stopping the Star Trek people ending up in the Star Wars universe anyway?
Oh, don't start the multiple universes theories, please.
Copyright.
Yeah, it's copyright. Yeah. The physics law of copyright. I forgot about that one.
Yeah. Essentially, the warp drive from Star Trek jumps the ship into hyperspace while maintaining a bubble of real space around the ship so your ship doesn't disintegrate. That's why the ships were always shaking and getting ready to fly apart when they got too fast in Star Trek, or at least that's the definition that everybody gave. My physicist uncle looked at me when I said that. He said, yeah. He handed me a book called The Physics of Star Trek that I read, and I just laughed. It was a fun show, but the physics in it are just ugh. So hyperspace, the hyperdrives on your starships jump, basically tear a hole in the walls between reality and throw your ship into another reality for a short period of time or a longer period of time, depending on how far you're going. And then... I know different hyperdrives have different abilities to do this. I mean, the Millennium Falcons was one of the fastest in the galaxy because Han spent a lot of money fixing the drives of his ship. It's funny, he never could afford a new paint job.
Or work out what a parsec was.
So, I finally heard an explanation of why he said that. And I'm just like, yeah, that maybe, or maybe it was just George Lucas's faux pas. He was trying to impress Obi-Wan Kenobi with his, laissez-faire smuggler attitude. And, of course, Obi-Wan is much older, wiser, has done hyperspace travel before. And he's just like, yeah, right, whatever. Yeah,
so he was just trying to impress the tourists, was he?
Yeah, he was trying to impress the tourists by talking big. That's the best explanation that anyone has been able to come up with for why he made such a doofus comment. The main difference between a hyperdrive and a warp drive is the warp drive is contained on the ship, and the hyperdrive, you just jump into hyperspace and then jump out. That's the only difference.
Nice.
And one is copyrighted by Paramount, the other is copyrighted by LucasArts.
And then it's the improbability drive, but that's for another episode.
Oh, don't. 42. No, do not. Sorry.
So there we go. Thank you, sir. As always, informative. Although even I don't think would have made the warp drive comment. So that's saying how silly it probably was.
He was. I think he was actually just stringing us on to see how long he could keep it going. But geez, you should have read some of the comments.
Well, look, be fair. Not everyone knows what a static subspace deformation is. I mean, come on.
What?
Yeah, subspace too. Yeah, I like that. You should copyright that term.
Someone already has.
Okay.
Yeah.
So thank you, Ed, for the lore update. Is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about before we depart?
I need to give a shout-out.
Oh, that's right. Yes, you do.
Yeah, I got involved in a group on the Ebon Hawk server a while back, and I had been involved in a guild, and it was kind of fun, and then they just sort of disappeared while I was on hiatus for finals at school and all that. And then I'm, you know, running around, and I run into a couple of guys from this guild, and they seem kind of cool. So I join them, and we get onto TeamSpeak, and they're just not just kind of cool. They're extremely cool. Very sick-minded. You would get along quite nicely with them, David. Oh, and by the way, they listen to the podcast. So this is a shout-out to Anger Management on the Ebon Hawk server. You guys are nuts. And I include myself in that now.
Excellent. Look, I don't know whether Anger Management are actually recruiting, but assuming that they're welcoming of new members, if you want a whole bunch of people that are as mad as Ed or worse, they sound like the guild to go to. And yeah, hi guys. And always happy to give a shout out to any guild that wants. There's obviously a lot of Oceanic guilds and other guilds that are welcoming of Oceanic players, and always happy to profile. We still do guild spotlights on the website. So if you want to do that, drop us a line via the contact page. I haven't done one for a while because I think most guilds have got so caught up in actually running the guild that they're not necessarily promoting themselves that much. So always happy to do that.
Yep.
Simon.
I'd like to do a shout down.
Uh-oh.
It's Star Wars related, but not Tor related.
Oh, thank you.
Star Wars Connect. Do not buy it. Please. Please do not buy it.
I don't know. I'd like the dancing. I know I said in the post I did what? On it that it was a bit sad and you know, I can't believe George Lucas approved it, but it looks funny.
Yeah, it's okay for Robot Chicken to do it. It's okay for Family Guy to do it, but you do not have Han Solo dancing to a Jason Derulo song. You do not have an Emperor versus Darth Vader dance-off.
Yeah, but God,
not on a licensed product. That's just wrong.
I bet you it's selling for tens of or hundreds of thousands of copies.
Oh, God, I think I just felt a blood vessel pop even thinking about it.
Apparently, if you get finish it up, there's an Easter egg in there. You can unlock a Darth Vader and Mario dance off.
There should be a George Lucas in a flannel shirt character that you can unlock, so that idiot can make as big a fool of himself as he has to every icon character in the franchise. Very, very, very unhappy.
Yeah, I know, but it's funny still. It's like watching an old person. No, I shouldn't. No, I'm not going to say what I was about to say.
No, don't go there. Don't go there.
You can say that after.
Yeah, I will. The only thing from me is, as I mentioned, I've been in New Zealand for 2 weeks and I've done a post on it. And do check out this post if you get the chance. In the lovely town of Wanaka, and I probably pronounce that really badly, one of the loveliest places I saw on the South Island, there is the National Transport and Toy Museum, and a ramshackle place it is, and I'm being kind there. It's just this whole bunch of sheds, and it's not necessarily the best presented place you'll ever see, but very reasonably priced to get into. And they had something like 8 massive cabinets full of old Star Wars memorabilia, right back from the original movies through to now. So masses of toys and dioramas and stuff like that. If you're going to the South Island, New Zealand, particularly if you're going to Wanaka, definitely go and check it out because there's some amazing stuff. But I took a whole bunch of photos, albeit on my phone, but there's some amazing collages of stuff, particularly if you grew up with this stuff in the 70s and 80s. It's well worth a look. Now, Simon, are you a New Zealander or something, or am I dreaming?
Or something.
Yeah, you've been to New Zealand recently.
I grew up. A lot of my youth was spent in New Zealand, yes.
Yes. North or South Island?
South Island.
There you go. So I assume you've been to Wanaka.
Yes, I have. And if you go there, go on the wine tours, also go to the maze, and you can run around like an idiot and pretend you're Han Solo in the Death Star.
Yeah, actually, yeah, the maze was good. We did do the maze. So there you go. The maze, Puzzling World, as it's called. Puzzling World and the National Transport and Toy Museum. But yeah, check out the post. It's great. Thanks, guys, as always. Mark, we still missed you. And Mark promises me he'll be back for a full episode sometime between now and next February. So that's good. We love you, Mark. And so as always, please don't hesitate to check out our forums, which I'm still thinking of killing because we get the odd nice person that drops in there, but I still think everyone has their own forums and ours are redundant, but still think about dropping in there. Facebook page, facebook.com/SWTOROZ, which has had a big influx of members because we're giving away those Tauntauns. So, Google Plus, we also have a page. And Twitter, twitter.com/SWTOROZ. Thanks again, everyone. We'll be back for episode 32. Oh, sorry, one more thing. Sorry. Said that 10 times. Is a big thank you to all the people that have bothered to add reviews or rate the podcast on the iTunes music store. It's appreciated.
I got to go, guys. Hang on.
Well, it's got explosive diarrhea again.
It's always bad when that happens.
Yeah, it is. So, yes, thanks to those who did the podcast reviews. They are appreciated. There was Ray and, sorry, there were a couple of other people too. I should have had that in front of me. I'm so organized. But it does help, and it does help get the podcast message out there. So if you do have an iTunes account, it'd be greatly appreciated if you could rate or even more ideally review the podcast, including the negative stuff. Say I'm sick of Ed's explosive diarrhea moments, or I'm sick of David's voice, because I know I am. Just do it. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Simon.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Ed's colon. And we'll see you for episode 32 in a fortnight. Bye.
Bye.
From the coldest depths of interstellar space to the nastiest packed urban sprawls of Coruscant, this was Flashpoint.